My name is Jane White and I'm a Resource Management Consultant with Response Planning Consultants. There were three key things I was going to cover. Mr. Christensen's gone into a bit of detail in some, so I won't repeat. And it was the controlled activity status for reconsenting, how to address the relationship between the NPS and Appendix E water quality standards, and then just briefly the maintenance and operational activities associated with the NPS. So I'd just like to highlight the last thing, the last matter a little bit.
Slow down.
Sorry, I'll highlight the last matter. The issue around the maintenance and operation activities primarily, and it relates to a question, either they're generally going to be provided for as permitted activities or otherwise by rules that are already in your plan, and Meridian lodged a number of submissions seeking minor changes to those, which the officer's recommendation has accepted, and I've listed in the back of my appendix and my evidence of recommendations supported. So that addresses a lot of the issues that were in existence at the time the submission was lodged. There's still a couple of matters that aren't addressed by those rules, and the example that I provided in my evidence relates to site dewatering and things like that. And the reason it's an issue is that the activity status is non-complying. The way that the Appendix E was written as notified was that there were some standards that wouldn't have been able to be met, and then in combination with the rule and policy approach of the plan, policy 15 in relationship with rule 5 and 6, which were the default rules, it meant you were non-complying. Policy 15 had a number of avoid matters, so I think the situation, it was highly likely that it would be, you would end up being contrary to those objectives and policies. The reason it was such an issue for the Manapouri Power Scheme in Meridian is that these activities are anticipated, they're expected, they're going to occur. So if you were contrary to objectives and policies, it would be difficult to find some unique and unusual circumstances, because we know maintenance activities are going to need to happen. And so it just created, and particularly for the Manapouri Power Scheme, a non-compliant activity status creates a fairly high a level of consenting to try and get through. And in my experience, while you may be able to say that the effects were minor in relation to that activity, it would still be some problems. And so my evidence seeks that the activity status for those activities that it weren't already provided for, rather than being non-compliant, is discretionary, so that you can still address the effects, so that if there are, because in discussions with Dr. James, it was a matter of trying to come up with criteria that were clear enough, because we know the type of activities Meridian are doing. So it was a matter of, it seemed the best approach was to provide for it as a discretionary activity, which enabled the specific effects at the specific occasion to be considered. If it showed that the effects were inappropriate, the consent could be refused. But if not, it just didn't create that additional hurdle that a non-compliant activity does for these type of activities. And in my evidence I address, I think it's only a few residual activities. I think most of them are already catered for. So that's really the point I just wanted to highlight.
Kristen?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think as far as dewater is concerned, others have submitted on the same issue and have raised very similar concerns. So I take your point and we'll consider all those together.
No questions.
I normally would, Mr. Chairman, but no, it's been explained very clearly, and my original concern, I think, has been addressed. I need to go back and sort of study it, but I think you've explained it quite well, thank you.
Well, I got a couple for you.
Good.
But not many, because we've traversed a number of the issues with Council and also the technical witnesses. But paragraph 70 in the primary evidence. It's the second to last line of paragraph 70, you use the words set out, this is relating to water quality standards set out in the regional plan rules. I'm just wondering why you put the word rules in there, because water quality standards could be set in a policy or in a schedule, or is it your view they can only be set in rules?
No, it's not my view. I think on that regard it was because it was the particular rules, and particularly Rule 6 had a direct link to achievement of the reason, so it was a specific rationale as opposed to a general one.
Right. So water quality standards could be set in policies, schedules, appendices, in
absolutely
the plan somewhere.
Yeah.
Now, paragraph 74, in terms of this suggested controlled activity rule for the Manapouri Power Scheme, on the top of page 18, you've got some conditions.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to ask you about condition 2. In light of my earlier question, my understanding of that recommendation is that it's based on assumptions, one of them being that the plan through the FMU process will get down to that level of detail and will set rates of take and volumes of allowable discharge for the NPS, which it may or may not do. And if I was in Meridian's shoes, I'm not sure that I would want it to do that. But instead of that, couldn't we just have, if we were to accept that a controlled activity rule is appropriate, just reserve as a matter of control the rate and volume of take and discharge? Which is how the Environment Canterbury rules are framed.
Yeah, yes, you could. The only reason I was looking at doing it as a condition to be met was really just to be clearer that at the end of the day, if that process has been gone through and there is an allocation regime set and Meridian is applying in accordance with that allocation regime, what scenario would you end up with an outcome where achievement of that regime is not appropriate?
I totally understand that, but my concern is that I don't know if the FMU process is going to do that, so I'd be uncomfortable recommending to the council that they adopt a rule that presumes that's going to occur when we have no idea if it's going to occur.
Well, it does and it doesn't in some ways, because if it doesn't occur, then the conditions are, it relates to the existing scenario, the existing situation, in terms of condition one, that it would be a replacement of existing water permits. So if something doesn't happen in the future plan process, it's the current conditions that are would be the status quo.
Okay. Go back to your first answer. You agreed an alternative would be just to reserve control over those matters?
It would.
Yeah, okay. And that would work just as well?
I'm not certain, but it would certainly work better than a discretionary activity.
Yeah. Paragraph 101. So this part of your evidence, does that address the scenario if we didn't adopt the recommended controlled activity rule for the NPS, or is this applied to?
No, this would the primary focus around this one would be on the minor maintenance activities.
The little minor ancillary
things
that you're addressing here. Paragraph 136, not a question, but just to let you know, there's been a lot of submissions on policy 15.
Mm-hmm.
The staff have recommended to us a number of iterations to that policy, and just to let you know, it's safe to say that's very much a work in progress. I just had noted down that I had a question from your rebuttal evidence. I still need to ask it. Yeah, so your paragraph 40.
Sorry, 40?
Yeah, 40, sorry. Right. And I'm just interested that the first clause B, the taking, diverting or discharges into the tail races. So how does that work?
Yes, that doesn't work.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry when I read that now.
Okay.
So because the taking of water into the tail races doesn't.
Yeah.
Doesn't work. Sorry. So that's
maybe
an error.
Just, just give some thought to what that might.
Yeah, I will.
And I don't need to ask you all my other questions because we've covered them.
Thank you. So that's the case for Meridian.
Yeah.
It might be worthwhile if we just check to make sure that we have taken on board the, all of the things that you've asked us to think about. So just now you've asked us about the wording of 52A, Rule 52A in particular.
Clause B.
Yep. You've asked us about the footnote in respect of the availability of groundwater allocation to accompany the, service water allocation to accompany the groundwater allocation.
Yeah, and that's and specifically in relation to table Y.4, primary groundwater allocation limits in appendix L.5.
And you've asked us to consider some different wording for the objective 10.
Yep. Yep, and to reflect on the wording, I'll put to you in terms of the beginning of Appendix A.
Yes.
And, you know, I think you understood the thrust of what I was suggesting. If you are inclined to consider some actual wording that captures that, which would overcome the issue of some of the changes that Dr. James has suggested and some of the concerns I expressed about that, given that that would have a region-wide application.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Just check with the other panel members. Any other homework you'd like Meridian to do?
Oh, I think they've got enough, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I'm happy.
Is it? Marcel, well, the homework?
Yes, just clarifying my mind about your proposed Rule 50. And you did ask about this, Mr. Chairman, just a few minutes ago. Rule 52A, Clause 3A, I think it is, 1. We'll ask that matters of control are reserved about mitigation to address adverse effects except for changes in flow and rate. We're going to think about that more, aren't we?
Yeah.
That was one that I would be a little bit worried about, to be honest.
Yeah, so can we perhaps just talk about that for a moment, because I think it's quite a there's quite a significant issue in there, and that is I think Mr. Chairman, what was concerning you, I think, if I picked you up correctly, is the prospect that perhaps there mightn't be a regime established in the plan. And so we've got, if you like, there's a policy vacuum, if you like, and here comes Meridian saying, can we have a consent, please? It's a controlled activity, and it's being assessed against, a policy vacuum. We don't know what the regime should be.
That's right.
And that's one scenario. I think that's possibly unlikely, but we don't know because there's another process to unfold before we get there.
Yeah.
Then I think, Councillor Rodway, you're if we assume that there is a regime in place, a flow and level regime in place in the plan, then my understanding is that what Ms. White has drafted is correct in that scenario, which is that once you've gone through the plan making process and you've established the regime, then Meridian has to apply in accordance with that regime, and that regime is, if you like, fixed and you can't be fiddled with in a condition.
Yeah.
You can fiddle with everything else in a condition in terms of other mitigation and so on, but you've got to stick to the script that we've all signed off on.
Yeah, and I understand that, because you wouldn't want to go all the way through to the High Court to establish the allocation and minimum flow regime through the planning process just to have to relitigate that as a consent process. I understand that.
That's right. So it might be that we need to be a little bit smarter and think about, under those two scenarios, what would the rule say if there was an allocation, and if there was a regime established in the plan, and if there wasn't, and just follow it through.
Yeah, and something we're advocating in all cases, and has been advocated to us, which we agree with, is short and simple is best. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much for that. We now adjourn until 1 o'clock.